remarks as we move through here. There are 1,600 faculty, 1,200 staff, and 26 to 28,000 students. So that's a sense of the overview. We have the Center for Educational Development, and I'm working in the Center for Educational Development and have been there for 4 years. And prior to that, I spent 5 years at Singapore Polytechnic developing content there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about this notion of building the field of dreams. And bear with me here. One of the things that I think that's very, very important as we move from traditional face-to-face to online environments is that we recognize that good teaching is good teaching. It doesn't matter whether it's face-to-face or whether it's in an online environment. And that we need to focus on what those things are that can contribute to and support good teaching in online environments. I started teaching in 1974 in a secondary school in a small town in British Columbia, Canada. And I spent 20 years in the classroom, so I'm very poignantly aware of the drama and the day-to-day grind that attends working with young students. And then I moved off and began to do work with adults, and then eventually moved into doing some of my own work in online development, and then over to Singapore. That's a brief history. Now, the challenge, as I see it, is, and I hope this all works, what is this business of the field of dreams? Well, it's not in some ways to make sure that they jump through the hoops or that we can train them, although in some aspects that's what we are trying to do. But for me, I looked at this, and I'm going to talk a little bit now about the history of this process. I first met James at an eAgenda conference, and at that eAgenda conference, he introduced LAMPS. I now recognize that I've been developing content and working with teachers for, by that time, 4 or 5 years. And it was a painful process. And I sat down and started working through this, and I thought, oh, you know, you have those eureka moments. And I thought, hey, this is great. This is very visually stimulating. I can work with people. I can show them how to design. I can let them think about their design. They can work through it. This is the start of my field of dreams. And so I ran off to NTU with this LAMPS in my pocket, thinking, all I have to do is just show it, and they're going to flock. When I got there, I started talking to Daniel, and he said, Paul, I want to tell you that it took 10 years for PowerPoint to be adopted in this university. So then I had a sense of that, but I'm pretty, let's just do it. Let's just push forward and do it. So we started to look at, well, what can we do here? So the first thing I wanted to do was integrate this environment into Blackboard. Now, I know a lot of you have your personal feelings about Blackboard. It's a learning management system. It does what it does. I think it's adequate. I'm not a proselytizer, but it works for me. But I wanted something that was a little bit better, so we integrated this within Blackboard. And I'll show you that later, what that looks like, so you can see how that works. We also decided, all right, how are we going to roll this out? I didn't want to come in and go, okay, everybody, all the professors, come down. We'll have a nice, large opening where I show you LAMPS. And then we'll offer trainings, and away you go. And I realized, I don't think we should do that. So what we decided to do is we were given the challenge of developing a pilot distance education program. And I was given a budget of $500,000. We know about the history of failures with distance education programs, and the university wasn't prepared to expend a lot of money. So the deal for us was that we had to have something that was rapid. Oops, oh goodness, sorry, I'm too quick on the fingers here. We had to have something that was rapid, extensible, affordable, scalable content development. We had a process where we do recorded lectures. We can record those lectures. So what I said was, all right, let's work with the professors. We will say to them, you do your recording of your lecture. We will go in and we will record that. Then we will take it and we will chunk it into 10 to 15 minute segments. And then we can build around those pre and post activities. Remember, I'm going to go in small steps here. I would like to have had much more interaction, but I thought, well, let's just get it moving. So we did that, and one of the things that I tried to do with the professors was to say, look, can you teach around your around concepts when you do your lectures? So that if you can't teach something in 10 minutes, or explain it in 10 minutes, whether you teach it or not, explain it in 10 minutes, I think that there's something dramatically wrong here. So we began to work on that process, and we chunked the materials, and then we provided pre and post activities. That was a little bit of the history around that. The next thing that I had to do was I had to think about a model. So I like Merrill's model. And so I thought, okay, with the professors, I have to show them something, but I also have to provide them something that they can very easily deal with. So I said, you know, we talk about it. What is it? We do engagement. So what is engagement? And one of the areas of engagement that I want to talk about that I think is really important is that Sacha Baba came up with this term called the four C's. So we have a curiosity, we have a challenge, we have the context, and we have control. And so I thought, well, I could talk to the professors about that. That's something that they can easily grasp. So we engage them. What are you going to do to engage them? Okay, we're going to activate what they understand or don't understand about this. We're then going to demonstrate that concept. Then we're going to ask you to create an application of that concept, and then you can integrate it within the larger picture. So I thought this was a way that we could begin, or I could begin to frame it for the professors. And that has worked fairly well in terms of my descriptions. I also like the work that Ron Oliver did with, and maybe he referenced this with Jan Harrington, but I call it his learning triumvirate. We have learning resources, we have learning support, and we have learning activities. So I thought by explaining these things to the professors in these ways, I could provide a very rational, these are engineers, they like things to be organized, sequential, visual, and tightly monitored. So I had to come up with something that could deal with that. And so I thought, okay, this I think can work. And then the other thing that I'm personally quite excited about is the work that's being done in cognitive neuroscience and in cognitive psychology. And so I sometimes will talk a little bit about these things, not too much, but because mostly I want them to talk about to reflect on the idea that learning begins with attention. If you don't have my attention, you can't teach me anything. So that's one of the things that I can describe to them when I'm sitting down with them or when my learning designers are sitting down with them in the process of reflecting about what they're going to do to create a sequence. And I also spend a little time talking about neuroplasticity. The idea that we can reframe the way in which the neural networks are created to sustain our foundational memory. Now, you can read about this. Marilyn Squire has written a book called Memory and Molecules, something like that, I forget now, just at the moment. It's one of those things, that cued recall, the older you get, the less you can recall that, but at least I can search it, right? So the idea of neuroplasticity also applies to working with the teaching staff. They can relearn, provided that they have a real good context and a sense of why they need to do that. Cognitive psychology, of course, how and why we learn. Well, I'm not going to teach you about that. You're all quite aware of these major areas, so I'm going to just kind of skip through that because we're aware of time limits. But a lot of people have talked about these things today, and I think that they're very important to the process. Now, I call that building on the known. And now I'll move on to my challenges. I particularly like this one. So I thought, well, you know, you can't, like the sheriff who organizes a posse and just throws everything together. I'm trying to organize the staff, and I can't just throw it all together. So I had to come up with a bit of a framework. So what I did was I started out with, as we know, the process here. I had to have a budget, and those were very scarce resources. So that's why we said to the professors, look, we know you don't have a lot of time. So what we're not going to ask you to do anything different except maybe put breaks in your PowerPoint presentations every 10 to 12 minutes so that we can chunk that material because we're doing recorded lectures. And that's something that they could buy into. You mean I don't have to do anything different? No, go and teach the way you want to teach. You want to use overhead projectors? Go ahead and use, OHPs? You can use OHPs. I don't care. Teach the way you teach. We'll just chunk it, and then we'll sit down with you, and we'll construct activities around that. So that was one of the things that we dealt with. Hiring staff, that became quite an issue. I had experience versus enthusiasm, personality clashes, and then also trying to create alignment. Believe it or not, not everybody buys lambs immediately. I don't understand why. I mean, I always shake my head, but you know, having been in this game a long time, you know that teachers are very, very strongly orientated to their own sense of what they know and what they don't know and what can work and what can't work. And so, you know, they have to, you can lead them to water, but you can't always make them, you know, drink as much as you think you'd like them to drink. So I had to deal with that. The other challenge, of course, was professor buy-in. First thing they said to me, what exists already, Paul? What is MIT doing? What is Stanford doing? What is Harvard doing? I said, well, if you want to know, you can go find out for yourself. Have a look around. So they zip off to MIT, and they say, yeah, well, they've got everything online, and it's open. I said, yes, it's very, very good. You have a syllabus that's handwritten. You have a lesson activity sequence that says, day one, read chapter one, go to this resource. So now, you saw that I mentioned cognitive neuroscience. I thought, MIT, guy's doing cognitive neuroscience, perfect for me, right? I zip off, I go there, I look at his handwritten syllabus, and I think, oh, okay, fine. And then I run off to his references, and I get to Elsevier, and I have to pay $30 for every journal article that I want, right? So there goes my enthusiasm for the open learning experience at MIT. I said to them, we're doing a different model here, guys. The other thing they talked about, what's in it for me? I was unable to persuade the university administration that the professors needed to be rewarded. They needed to be given some compensation. I managed to convince them that if for every hour that the professor gave us, that they would take an hour and give them extra time to do the work, no payment. That didn't work out, unfortunately, but we are now working on a model that kind of that'll support that. And then, of course, how do we know it'll work? That was always their next question. So we said, well, let's just develop it, and then we'll pilot it, and I'll talk a little bit about that. We created a professional professor orientation package. Now, the package was we worked with them on what they needed to do in their classrooms, how they needed to break their PowerPoints up, how we were going to sequence them, and we spent about an hour with them there would be three professors, and there are 10 courses, so that would be 30 professors, but we work with each of those groups one at a time. Then we chose our instructional strategy. The problem is institutional inertia and resistance to change. This is the way we do it, and we have doctorates, and we know what we are doing, and we're comfortable with that. So what I suggested to them was that what we'll do is we'll just, the instructional strategy, we will build on what you're doing. How's that? So that I'm not going to create too much resistance there. And then we began to look at framing the model. And when I framed the model with them, I said, how about we just move slowly into interactivity? So in other words, this is the recorded section. Now, what do you want to them to know before they come to this, so you can do a test of prior recall of knowledge? And at that time we didn't have the branching, but now we do. So that then the next step was, of course, that okay, if you already know that, then you don't necessarily have to do this resource, you can go to another resource. And so we're working on that now. We had to develop a production process. A lot of that was quick, rapid, extensible, affordable. So I hired students to come in and chunk these materials. We use AccuLearn, so we can immediately pump them up onto the server. We get the link, and all we have to do then is send the link to the professor and say, how would you like to introduce this activity? It's finished. What would you like to do next? Okay. And then we had to build, we inserted them in the LAMs and we populated the course site. Then we come to the support systems. We created a video index for this one. Imagine that we have, it's a 2-hour to 3-hour lecture, so there could be up to 8 videos in there. So what, they're not going to go through all of these sequences all the time. So we had a bit of a challenge because, you know, those long LAM sequences that you saw, we had some of those. The students get lost, so we started to break them into chunks themselves. So we had part 1, part 2, part 3. We created a syllabus template, and I'll show you that later. We had to choose the delivery model. I didn't think this one has been done. There's another technology that I saw that I think has transformed what we can do with teacher education and learning, whether it's distance or blended. And that's synchronous technologies. And I've been using synchronous technologies like Centra and Interwise and Illuminate and most recently AccuConference, which is by far the best in terms of video and audio codecs. I think that with that, a good online facilitator can craft a very interesting course that the students can work their way through, can be available for 1-hour sessions to either build on what they know or don't know, enrich what they know or don't know, and or simply take questions. And so the model we had was 70% fully online, 30% 1 hour a week, the students come into a synchronous session. And we've done that, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Achieving buy-in. Well, first thing we had to do was we piloted the model. We ran 4 fully online courses. We've run 4 over the last 4 semesters. Fully online in the evenings. The students do not come to the university, and they use the model of going through the LAMS activities and then coming into the classroom. We have worked on providing the professors with the materials that the students are going through. And one of the things that I thought was very, very significant about LAMS was the Q&A. We had multiple choice before, yeah, so that's not a big deal. But the question and answer thing allows for the students to see very quickly what they know or don't know, how they stand amongst their peers without too much embarrassment. Whereas if I were in here now to start asking questions, people might, even now, we all might be a little bit reluctant to answer just in case. We're in with our peers who are all very, we all know, have various degrees of brilliance, and we do not want to be less brilliant than anybody else. So the students are the same. And so I said to the professors, if you can use this, that's great. When I started to provide them with the feedback from the students, I didn't have to do anything after that because their eyes were opened like that. They could see, oh, yeah. And then the idea was, okay, you can take this, now craft your synchronous session to support what they are understanding or not understanding. So that's how that's kind of been my sermon on the field, if you like. Professor support. Again, when we gave them the feedback and when they actually did the synchronous sessions, I stayed with them. Every hour, every time they ran it, I stayed with them because there are always issues. And I did not want this to fail. As soon as the synchronous session crashed one time, if I hadn't been there and got it back up and running, that would have been the end of everything because then they would have just said, well, you see, it doesn't work, right? And that was the rationale. So we stuck to it. We stayed with it. I said it could work, and we now have it so that it's working. So we're pleased with that. The students, what we do with the students is what we provide a face-to-face orientation. These are 70 to 100 students taking each of these courses. We bring them into an environment like this. We walk them through the LAMS activities. Right? This is what you're going to do, this is what you're going to see, this is what you're going to expect. And we walk them through how to set up the synchronous classrooms, how to get into the synchronous classrooms, and then we have a support desk that we man on a regular basis to deal with things like sometimes in LAMS, the ACU conference, we call it presenter, but the video recording won't open, or it'll open and the video won't play. And so things like that when the students are taking it on distance education, they want that to work. Administratively, we met with the administration. The College of Engineering sponsored this with CED. So we met with the college deans on a regular basis. I had a representative from one of the universities there, one of the college schools, and we met with them on a regular basis and provided feedback so they knew what was going on. How do we maintain the buy-in? That's been an interesting situation. We invoke champions. One of the challenges is that there's now this thing that if it's online, it's not recognized as a teaching hour, and that's something that we're going to have to deal with. Right? So now they'll say, well, that's not a teaching hour, really, because you're not face-to-face with the students. So we get around it by having the synchronous sessions, but because you create an hour of online materials, that's going to hurt you. And in the university, we've moved into a much more stronger research orientation, 60 to 40. So now it's about research. It's not about the teaching and learning. The teaching and learning has become secondary, but not secondary. So when you talk about working with professors, they just say to me, well, Paul, how much is this going to take away from my teaching? So I'm really very cognizant of keeping things in order there. Okay, opportunities. So many of the professors, we've lost quite a few professors in the transition in this last little bit. So I'm now talking about what LAMS can do. So it invites innovation, as far as I'm able to tell at the moment. It invites pedagogical innovation. One of the things that we've done, we've created a program, a certificate for teaching in higher education. And the purpose behind the certificate in teaching for higher education is that we want to get every professor who doesn't, and most of them have no teacher training, onto first base in terms of setting up a lesson. What are your enabling objectives? What are your terminal objectives? How are you going to sequence your content? How are you going to assess them? How are you going to know that you're meeting all of those kinds of things? So in the Certificate for Teaching for Higher Education, what I did is I took this as an opportunity to have them go through LAMS activities based around pedagogical concerns. So that I wasn't talking about LAMS. They were just going through an activity. I didn't say, oh, here's the tool. It's like, go through it, and then we built on that. It provides definition and substance to the term blended learning. We now, based on our experiences and our success with the distance education pilot, are moving towards a blended learning process across campus. Now, that means we've said to the provost, we can allow the professors to teach less, research more. And so we've most recently been given the go-ahead to have a pilot project where we use the model that I've discussed, which is driven by LAMS as its anchor, to have the professors create that part of their online learning activities. And so we're going to work with a pilot in four schools. I most recently have piloted one in, I think it was this young lady here who teaches UML. Yes. Computer software engineering. So I've been working with a professor there, and we've developed we've taken all his lectures, put them online, and now he no longer does the lectures. They go through the LAMS activity, so I can share that as well. It supports the reusable learning objects. I don't have to tell you that. And we've also been working on, and this is a big one for us, and it's something that we've been working with LAMS on. There's a health and fire safety officer now on campus, and we have to provide evidence that that all staff and all students have gone through the safety training. So we're going to use LAMS to do that, and that's going to be allow us to roll out, but on a very large scale, so I'm a little nervous because large numbers accessing that, so we're going to do load balancing, et cetera, and hopefully we'll bring that to success. But we're going slowly on that as well. Also, there's a major initiative in Singapore under the Workforce Development Agency. And the Workforce Development Agency prepares adults to be retrained for various sectors in the Singapore economy. And when the director of the Workforce Development Agency came to visit us, he was concerned about we already have these PowerPoints, how do I get them up? So I showed him the LAMS model that we developed, and because he's an educator, he immediately saw how he could do that, and so now we will be pushing forward this blended learning model, and we're going to be supporting the Workforce Development Agency. A series of providers will be coming to NTU for training on this. So again, that's an innovation in the training sector. Obviously, it opens up education in many, many significant ways. For me, it's engaging, visually compelling technology. Teachers, it extends things. Let me, for example, in the Certificate for Teaching for Higher Education, one of the things that happened was I had to work with the NIE professors who we had contracted to do this. Now, they were doing a blended learning model. They were teaching my staff how to do online learning. And they were just going to put a PowerPoint up on the Adventure, our Blackboard, and that was, and it was very animated, and it was very, but there was no interactivity. So what I did is I called them over, sat them down, opened up the interface, said, what do you want to do? How do you want to introduce it? And quickly, bang, they were going, hey, how come we don't have this? So I said, well, you know, you'll have to look at your folks. So immediately they began to see the incredibly powerful opportunities that that interface provides for thinking about the design process. And even if it just did that, to me, that would be great. You know, that you're sitting down and you're thinking about that process, but it does much more. It supports a more democratic access to education and its derivative benefits, and that's for a larger discussion later on. But because of open source technologies like Moodle, that's like Sakai, and like LAMS, educators and children in Thailand, for instance, we have people coming from Thailand, they can now provide the same kind of learning opportunities without incredible expenses incurred that the Singapore students are enjoying. So I think that that's very, very powerful. And I hope that by doing that, we try to transcend our own nationalities and recognize that, you know, we're one people on one planet. The other thing that it does is it frees up professors for research. This is a very important component in NTU. I don't know what's going on in other places, but it's research, research, research. And so now I'm saying, okay, you want to do it? Give me the time now. We can do it, and you don't have to come back. You can revisit it. You can customize it, but you're not going to have to redo everything. And so I'm preaching that. It provides an easily understood framework. Engage, activate, demonstrate, apply, integrate. You got that? Yeah, I got that. We think that it encourages learner independence. We are developing an active learning movement in NTU. We have been for 3 years. Part of that is the introduction of audience student response systems, but also LAMS. The idea is to get the students to take the responsibility for their learning. But we also have to, I'm not a real strong believer in unstructured curriculum. So I think that, yeah, we have all of this out there, but structured curriculum, we need somebody who's going to kind of provide that monitoring, and hopefully it'll be teachers using technologies like LAMS. I think, and we were talking about it earlier, it provides opportunities to support various learning styles. And the learning styles debate has been going on since the 1980s, so I'll quickly move on. It facilitates the establishment of global classrooms. I don't think that students should only be in classrooms in their own country. At some point, once a day, they should be out in a classroom with other students from other countries working together in these environments, and it supports that. So I'm really, really pleased that is happening. Prognostications, quickly. The pedagogical planner, you've seen a lot of that. That's one of the things that I think is very, very important. I've also crafted something that I thought would be appropriate in there. I don't know whether I'm going to have time or not. we also have, I think that what's going to happen is there's an attention engagement monitor. I'm working with some professors in the School of EEE and the School of Computer Engineering. And what they have is a biofeedback monitoring system that they're working along with haptic technology so that in virtual environments you get that space substance feel that you didn't have before. And one of the things that they have now is that they can monitor the attention. And when the attention lags, the system can prompt, much like I could walk over to the student who's talking and or falling asleep and give them a nudge. So that's maybe a little bit more intrusive, but in an online environment, when attention lags, that can be important. So I think that's going to come online. Instant online support, I think I'm going to really shake it up a little bit. The avatars that you're seeing in places like Second Life, we have developed one. One of the professors that I'm working with has one. The avatar, it's text-based, but it will integrate within the within any environment and will provide feedback to the student. Now, it's not an intelligent avatar yet, okay? So you can feed in what responses that you think you need. I also think that with synchronous technologies and tools like LAMS, that we could have 24/7 support, that professors could be hired on to monitor these synchronous classrooms for an hour a day, and that students from all over the world could go through these activities and always have that immediate support. That might mean a little bit of a shift in the way we think about our allocating resources. And it provides, again, I can't emphasize this enough, it provides opportunities to deal with various learning styles. And I know that we've already done that in a blended learning model that I was mentioning with a software engineer. We put them through a learning styles inventory before they took the class. And then we structured the resources to reflect that. Okay? How am I doing for time? Okay. Let me quickly go here. Okay, just for your purposes, I'm not going to open up the whole thing here, but this is an example of, and some of you have seen this. Oh, you dirty rascal. Okay. This is a example of how we've crafted the business of engaging attention. You can see the professor's there. He's doing a welcome. This is a tool we developed called YouRecord. It's similar to YouTube. Again, because they can use these question and answer, we can create some purpose behind the lesson. These are the kind of responses. I'm not going to give them all. But when they get responses like this, they realize that there is something significant happening in that environment. Okay. We can activate prior knowledge. I think that's pretty easy. We've used that process with them. Again, the answers that they get. This course was on smart product design and development. Again, the demonstration. You can see that he's showing. We record that in the lecture theater. He's showing that. He's showing the slide. Again, I don't think it's rocket science. I don't think it's terribly, you know, innovative. I've done more interesting things than that. But it's taking the first steps in laying out the parameters for the new experiences for the learners. Again, they can apply the knowledge. And here are some of the examples that we get. They can integrate that knowledge. Why is it important? The students respond. The surveys on this, I'm not going to talk into that. Your brain may be a little full right now. Here's how we access LAMS. We put it in. There's a LAMS monitor view there. We also drop down menu here in Blackboard. So when I hear a lot of complaints about Blackboard, I think it's mostly because they've dominated the market, but you know, it works. There's the interface. When they come in here, they can see the sequences that have been deployed, and they can refresh the sequence list so they can click here, and it'll deploy immediately into Blackboard, into the interface. Or I can click here and go to a new sequence and create a new sequence. That's our LAMS monitoring sequence. This is the software engineering course, and you can see that there are 86 students. It gets a little crowded in here, but we ran one experiment last semester with this class. Not so effectively in terms of the students. We changed things, and it's gotten better. Saving the sequences, we're hoping to make this a little bit better because this group one, which is the reusable sharing objects, Ernie, that's what I'm talking about. You know, I don't know what course that is anymore. It's just a course, so we need to have something that's a little bit better for us. This was the software engineering. This is what the first demonstration of what his course looked like when I first started working with him. How did I start working with him? Certificate in teaching for higher education, the course. Hey, Paul, I'd like to do something. I said, okay, great, let's do it. Here's the tool, and we started from there. This is his next year's group. He's using our syllabus template. Much more engaging, much more active. His process is, again, I'm going to walk you through. He's doing his introduction. He's using the tool. If we didn't have the model, he'd never buy it. So we're going to show this model to the rest of the professors. Again, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, there's much more that can be done, but I can't get them there. This is the idea. He's provided all these resources in here that the students can go through and select which ones they want. He puts them through this quiz, and this is where we did the branching. So if they get a certain number, they go through to a different experience of resources, as you know. Okay, and then this is the interface. This is the interface now, and I talked a little bit about things that I'd like to see in LAMS, or you know, going forward, what I think is possible. I'd like to see some default sequences. We talked about them before. I call them a default sequences, for lack of a better word. You can pick up your own. So we would say, what are you teaching, Paul? Are you teaching a concept? Are you teaching a rule? Are you teaching a procedure? Okay, and then Paul says, well, I don't know. I'm teaching a concept. Well, how would you like to present the materials? Would you like to do a case study? Would you like to do a problem? Would you like to do a lecture? And I think that's kind of the process that Diane is building towards much better than I am, of course. But then I wanted to, if I said case study, then we have a repository of case studies, but we put them in there, case study one for triple engineering or case study one for MSE. Right, and so for all of my schools, then I would have these templates that we are paid to design, right? Because that's what we know what we're doing, right? So that's what I would like to see in there. And then you know, sort of my prognostications. This is the avatar. I have a live demo of it, but the sound is so bad, I'm embarrassed to show you. So what happens is I come in and I type in my question, and the avatar talks. Now you could put yourself in there. And you can dress it up and stuff like that. This is not my work. This is Alexei Surin from the Soviet Union. I mean Russia, who's working at NTU. Has been there for a long time. But I'm working with him on this project. There's our synchronous virtual session. I can have the students up. You can see that they're in there. It takes good talent to do a virtual session. It's like getting into a car the first time. You have to learn all of the features. This is the responses from the staff over when they use the LAMS activities. What would you do? Let me just come back here. I said, well, as you're a student, what would you have told your professors to do? And so this is what they came up with. Because this is what they came up with. See, I believe that everybody that's teaching probably knows what they would like. And so I like to draw it out of them. I can use LAMS to draw it out of them better than if I ask the question. Okay, don't read from the textbook. Can you believe that's still going on? Yeah. Okay. And then advice for the professors. Okay, you can. Okay. Walk the talk. Slow down, engage them. Yeah, I mean, sure. Okay. I want to talk about the LAMS completion rates because that's something that's bothered me. If in the distance education program, one of the things that was going on was that, okay, how many start, how many complete, and what's the percentages? And I pulled this graph, and I've got it graphed there for you. So the blue ones are the DE ones. These are graduate students, like you, like say 30 years and above, maybe 28 and above. They're coming back to NTU to get degrees. And these are their completion rates in blue. One of the things that we realized was that with the video index, they would just wait till it came out in the video index They wouldn't go through the LAMS activities. The professors had to keep forcing them to go through and say, look, it's important that you go through that. But there was no carrot for them, no incentive, because there was no marks. You can see that with the undergraduate students, it's much higher, and because they were being given credit for doing it. So there are some reflections on the technology, the clunkiness sometimes, that and the interface. So we have to dress up the interface a little bit. You know, we have to get better at that. So that's pretty much everything that I have to say on that. If you have any questions, I'd be willing to try and answer them at this point.
Conscious of time, and not wanting to keep everyone too late. So while I switch over, perhaps if there's a burning question for Paul, that'd be great. Otherwise, I'll get into my final talk.
Okay. Yes.